Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John Couch. Together, we have a big welcome for you to the Buckmaster Show. Today is Tuesday, March 30th. We are about ready to wrap up the month of March 2021. Buckmaster, 11th year now on the radio, on the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. Our radio station is 1030. It's Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. The call letters are KVOI, The Voice. Worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. We piggyback that live feed from kvoi.com. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line to the president of the Tucson Unified School District Governing Board. It's a five-member board. Layla Counts is the president. Layla, how are you?
I'm good, Bill. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you very much for asking. Layla is a fourth-generation teacher with deep roots in the district. Her grandmother and her mother both worked in the TUSD district, and she's a TUSD parent. She works as a professional, what would you say, educator?
I do professional development for teachers, so I'm a teacher's teacher.
There you go, a teacher's teacher. How to make teachers better, let's put it that way. So how would you characterize where we are in this re-entry phase at Tucson Unified? What percentage do you think of the students are actually going to school?
Across the board, across our district, it's averaging about 50% of students chose to be in class at schools, and 50% chose to stay remote. And now there's some variance depending on the school or the region, but not anything significant. It was really surprising to me that 50%, it was about a 50-50 split.
What happens to the other half that have decided we're just going to stay home?
Well, they're just going to continue learning the way that they have been, and I'm assuming if they chose to stay home, it's working for those kiddos. And so they're just going to continue on. Some of them have the same teacher. Some of them have another teacher that teaches that grade at their school. But it's just a continuation of how we started the year in August.
How about the teachers, Layla? Have they come back?
They have, yeah. So we had a whole process for recommendations on who would be staying remote and teaching remotely and who would be coming back into the classroom, putting the age of our employees first and any pre-existing conditions and that sort of thing. Because we did have a lot of people that wanted to stay remote that we were not able to accommodate for. So we tried to make it as fair as possible and have kind of a measurement tool on who would be able to stay home and who wouldn't. So since we have about 50% of our kiddos back in school, we have about 50% of our educators back in the classroom.
What about your own children? Have they returned to class?
They have, and it's great. They are so happy. My daughter's in first grade and my son's in third grade, and she just warmed my heart the other day. She said, "Mom, I made a new friend at school." And it was a really tough year for both of my kids, but especially for her being so little and just not getting that social interaction. And I just see a huge improvement on her mood, and she's happy to go to school. And yesterday she told me not only did she make a friend, but that she loves school, which she has not said since they left last spring due to the pandemic.
So the kids are real excited to be back, and I guess they're excited when they come home to you.
Yes, they are. Nice. It's so good. And not only is it really helping my kids socially and emotionally and giving them that interaction which they need for their proper development, but academically, you know, my kids, and I know that remote learning worked for some students, but for my kids, they just were not absorbing. They were not able to sit and be on a screen for 7 hours a day. I can't be on a screen for 7 hours
a day. No, I would find that I would be one of those students. If I had to be on a screen for 7 hours, I would have been going crazy. So
yeah.
I'm glad I didn't have to face that in this lifetime. The five-member board, how are you all getting along? I mean, one of the marquee issues with previous boards had been discontent. Is this board coming together?
Yeah, I think that this board is doing a great job at working together and trying to find common ground and being respectful and professional, collegial. It's been a pleasure to work with this new board.
People don't know this. A lot of them just think that you're a paid employee when you're on the board. This is a voluntary position, and it's nonpartisan, correct?
It's nonpartisan. It's unpaid. It's just, you know, work of the heart. We're all parents on this current board, and we're doing this because we want to serve the students of TUSD, and that's really our sole focus. And I think that's one of the reasons why I really, really enjoyed this particular board. Is that we're all parents, and it really shines through in where our priorities are and how we vote. We all always put the kids first.
Are you okay financially with the government assistance that's come in to cover some of the costs of the COVID year?
We have been very lucky to receive now two allocations of the ESSER funds, the government federal funds for schools, and we are in a good position. We were able to open safely, and we have HEPA air filters in every single classroom in TUSD and in all the common spaces. We were able to upgrade all of our air conditioning and filtration systems.
Wow, I had not heard that. So
yeah.
You got some new air filters in there.
Oh, yeah, 50,000.
Wow. Whoa.
Yeah, and we also got 50,000 N95 masks for any staff member that wants them. So the money was needed for us to open safely, and I'm just so happy that we got it, and it doesn't seem that it has been swept by the governor for any purposes. And so we have two of our ESSER funds that we've already received, and we'll have another one next year.
Do the kids get lunch now? Are their lunchrooms open?
Yes. That's one of the things that we were able to spend the money on, free lunches and breakfast for all of our kids.
Wow.
In TUSD. Yeah. And one thing that I was really proud of is that we were able to serve the entire Tucson community free and reduced lunches and breakfasts, even during the closure. And while kids were remote, we had buses that went all around the 250 square miles of TUSD, delivering lunches to any child that wanted one. And they had different stops and pickup places. So it was a really strong program. And I was happy that TUSD was able to provide not just for our kids, but for all of the kids.
Are the kids all masked up along with the teachers? And is there social distancing?
Yes. I know that the CDC said that the 3-foot recommendation, which is great. I think that that's wonderful. Get that message out there for the schools that need it. But because we only have 50% of our kids in class, we are able to maintain that 6 feet of social distancing. And all students, all staff, anybody that's on our campuses is masked up. And we have hand sanitizer stations in every classroom that we were able to install, and water bottle refilling stations. So our facilities department really stepped up to the challenge and did an amazing, amazing job getting our schools safe and ready. And they are, and they're working wonderfully.
So kudos to your cleaning staff. Boy,
yes.
They've had to put in a lot of extra time.
Yes, facilities and our cleaning staff did amazing work.
Before we let you go, is the school calendar any different to wrap the year up? How's that going to work, Layla?
Yeah, so we are lucky with this money that we received from the federal government that we are going to be providing free summer school 5 days a week at every single elementary and K through 8. And also in the high schools, there is it's more focused and strategic on which classes we're going to be doing in the high schools over the summer, but an entire 5 weeks of summer school for the families that want it, and also for incoming kindergartners.
I think that's very advisable after a difficult year, and of course parents will have different views on this, but at least that is out there.
It's an option.
Yeah.
If you want it, if you need
yep.
it, if your kids, like I said, my kids, now that they're back in school, are happy to be back in school. They've craved being around other children, and so I think a lot of families are going to take that opportunity on.
Well, I agree with your kids. I'm a people person, and I would like to interact with people face to face. And even during our dark days of COVID here, I had to do the whole show telephonically, and it was a little bit tough because I like to see people in studio if possible, and just a whole different kind of feel that you get than rather all on the phone. But Layla, thank you very much for spending some time with us. Good luck to you.
Thank you, Bill.
Layla Count, she's the president of the 5-member TUSD Governing Board. Shelley Fishman is with me in studio, and he is, I can see the whites of his eyes. But before we go to Shelley and before we go to the break, I want to talk a little bit about one of our great sponsors, and that's Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, also home to one of the finest coffee cakes you could ever imagine. Had the almond coffee cake over the weekend. Oh my goodness, just so delicious. A very delicate, flaky kind of pastry with a very fresh almond filling. Mona's is open right now for lunch. They open in the morning at 6:30 for breakfast. They're at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, and they're very proud of their revamped website, monasdanishbakery.com. You can place your order there and pick up your goods whenever you would like. You could call ahead or just stop in, as so many have done. What great weekends they've had because of the weather being so good out on the patio to enjoy some of their great coffee and a wonderful pastry. Mona'sDanishBakery.com. Shelley Fishman giving me a symbol that certainly shows a very flat day on Wall Street, but we have some very important things other than how the markets are doing today to talk with Shelley about right after this.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
Why is mining so important? It's the foundation of everything that defines a society. Everything you see is a product of mining. No matter when, no matter how, no matter why, every society on this planet has developed, grown, and modernized based solely on the minerals it could process. That, my friend, is why mining is so important.
Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
And Shelley Fishman, his own views are always quite interesting. Good to see you, Shelley. How's your week going so far?
Well, it was going fine until a couple of minutes ago, Bill, when you said you could see the whites of my eyes.
Ooh.
And all I could think of was, don't shoot!
No. That's a very good sign because you do not want to see the bloodshots of your eyes.
Oh, yeah. There it is.
Shelley Fishman with us in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios. I don't want to spend a lot of time on what's going on in the markets because got some important things to say. It's basically, we can say it almost in one word, can't we?
Well, the markets are flat today.
Yeah.
But if you take a look at as we approach tomorrow's end of the first quarter, the Dow is up year to date almost 10%.
Ooh.
The S&P is up around 8%, and the NASDAQ is about flat. But if you go back to, say, January of 2020, the growth in the markets has been very, very normal. So we're, you know, having 12, 15% years, except the NASDAQ, which had a 40% year last year. So the markets are doing very well and are reflecting some concern about overheating in the economy. But for the most part, a lot of optimism about the fact that the economy has a lot of stimulus in it and is going to recover nicely.
Did they revise those jobless claims?
They revised the jobless claims. They revised the GDP growth claims. Everything is up a little from, you know, where it had first been reported. I think we had a little bit of a slump in February because of bad weather mostly. But for the most part, what we're going to see, if the forecasters are right for this year, is GDP growth, real GDP growth, in the area of about 6%. We haven't seen that in a very, very long time, which could actually bring us, in terms of actual GDP amount, about a little bit higher than where we left off when this pandemic started. So we could actually see some growth from year to year by the end of this year.
One thing we haven't talked about is investors and taxes with this new administration.
Yeah.
Are there some changes in the wind, Shelley Fishman?
Well, they're not only in the wind, but they're scheduled for tomorrow.
Oh, really?
The president is going to announce his infrastructure plan, and it could be a bifurcated plan or it could be all uniform. And at the same time, we're expecting that he'll announce some changes that he would like to propose in order to pay for this, or to pay for a bunch of it. And one of the changes that is likely is the way taxes are calculated on investments.
Mm.
And, you know, the woe is me crowd is saying, well, if you do that, you're going to shut down the stock markets and nobody's ever going to invest again, ever. And that, of course, is nonsense. So let's take a look at, and what we're really looking at here, Bill, and is not the extreme stuff where we would actually tax every transaction, but the discounted tax rates for dividend income and capital gains income. If that were to be reset to the way you tax 1099 or W-2 income, that could generate a whole bunch of revenue. And the question there, of course, is who's going to be affected by that? So this is a little wonkish, but let's get into the weeds.
I knew you were going to say that, but it is important. That's why we brought it up.
So 40% of the American public has no investment in stocks or bonds at all.
No commitment to the markets.
No commitments to the markets. They have other things to do with their money. And so that's
four out of ten.
That's
okay.
About 40. You know, maybe 38%.
Right, it's
close to 4 out of 10. I'm really using round figures here. Another 20% of the American public has investments in what we call risk assets, and these are in their IRAs or 401ks. Okay, mm-hmm. IRAs and 401ks are taxed when you use them. Okay, and they're taxed at whatever your tax rate is at the time when you're older. Okay, mm-hmm. Now that doesn't apply to Roth IRAs, which you've already paid taxes on. But that's a small percentage of these numbers. So any change in how you tax dividends or how you tax capital gains is completely unaffected. For that 20% of investors who only have what we call qualified investments.
Okay.
Retirement investments.
Right.
Now, so that's 60% of the U.S. population, no effect whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Another 30% of the population are people who have some investments in non-qualified stock investments, and those people could be affected, certainly if a part of their investments were dividends, and they had to pay those taxes at a normal tax rate rather than a discounted rate. There could be some effect on those people. The majority of those people, however, these are not speculators. These are real long-term investors, and for the majority of those people, they don't do a lot of trading, and there's not a lot of
they're not day traders.
And I've seen a lot of these people, and they buy blue chip stocks and they hold them forever, and when they die they go to their beneficiaries, their heirs, and guess what happens? They get revised up. The basic cost basis for those stocks gets revised up for the date of their death, and there's no capital gains tax due.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so for that 30% of investors, the effect of changing these laws would be minimal. Okay, even if you didn't put a floor on it.
Right.
And it's likely that the floor we're hearing about is $1 million in income before even these changes took effect. Now, that leaves the 10% of investors who are what we call in the top 10% of the earning population of the country. Those people could be affected in terms of the fact that these are the people who are going to pay for this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So the question is, well, does that mean that they're not going to buy stocks anymore? Well, let's look at this. So stocks go up on average 12% a year, real estate about 5% a year, and if you put your money in a savings account, you get less than 1%. So where are they going to go? They're going to continue to do what they've always done and take the hit. And by the way, what it might do is reduce the volatility a little bit, because these people have a large and outsized effect on the number of shares that get traded on a daily basis or a monthly basis. So if it reduces the volatility a little bit more, that would make the stock market appear to be more reactive to the formulas people use, which is that stocks are a reflection of, you know, forward-looking costs. And so it might not be a bad effect on the markets at all. It might reduce volatility. So if we were to do this, if Biden were to propose this, and it were actually to be passed through, say, a reconciliation process without affecting the need to change the filibuster rules, the effect on most people, the vast majority of Americans, would be zero to almost none. And for those people who are affected, they really have nowhere else to go with their money. So that money is gonna continue to be invested pretty much like it is today.
So the fear was these people would just say, I'm out of the market.
The
so where are they going to take their money?
Yeah. Where are they going to
take the money? Take the money and invest it?
You can't get 12% on average in anything else.
No.
And some of these investors are less risk averse. And so they're not looking at 12%. I mean, if they were invested in high-tech segments of the market, they could have gotten 20 or 30% returns, not on average, but certainly last year. So if they have to pay a little more in taxes for the stuff that they churn, so what? Mm-hmm.
All right, Shelley Fishman, always a pleasure. We'll see you next Tuesday with your Money Maker Report. Quick question, why has the NASDAQ been such a kind of an underperformer in the first quarter?
Because it was such an overperformer
okay. All
last year, and people are, you know, taking some profits and,
yeah,
and making sure that they get their portfolios, you know, ready for what's coming.
All right. Thank you, Shelley. Have a great week.
You too, Bill.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Have you ever imagined how your life would be without the modern conveniences you rely on every day? Everything you need depends entirely on products produced from mining. Without mining, think Stone Age. Your work commute might be a bit slower, but you could still have social media. Bathing shouldn't be a problem, but it won't be in a tub. So unless you're a caveman, you can see everything that enriches your life depends on the many miracles from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Reed Park Zoo is now open for wildlife walks, a modified guest experience prioritizing safety. To find out more about all the changes and the new safety precautions now in place, visit reedparkzoo.org. The community-approved 10-year master plan ensures your zoo's future is brighter than ever before. We've missed you, and so have the animals. They're waiting to welcome you back to the Reed Park Zoo.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends.
So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show, Tuesday edition, as we get ready to wrap up the month of March. We're in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. Stop by Green Things if you've got any gardening questions, and I always do. I always have a lot for the staff at Green Things over at 3384 East River Road, and they always can handle the questions like, what color should I put in the garden that will give me some color through the upcoming hot weather? We've got 90 degrees on the horizon, too early, I think, to get into the 90s, and even 93 by this weekend. So we do need to think about survivability of our gardening, of our plants. Green Things, located at 3384 East River Road. Their website's Green Things AZ. Stop by Zocalo Village for that great, the great choices that they have. Beautiful things. Much of their merchandise handcrafted in Mexico. So it's ZocaloVillage.com and GreenThingsAZ.com. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now to the capital of Arizona. Senator Kirsten Engel is with us on our live line, state senator representing Tucson, and recently announced she was the first candidate, to use that cliche, throw her hat into the ring in what will be an open seat with Ann Kirkpatrick retiring in Arizona's congressional district number 2. Senator Engel, how are you?
I am fine. Bill, thanks for having me.
Tell me a little bit about why you were first to step up and declare your candidacy to take the next step and run for Congress. Why does it feel right to you right now, Senator Engel?
Well, it's an incredibly important seat. This is, you know, this is our congressional seat, and it's going to be important in the days ahead. And there's really, you know, no time to waste. Getting out there, talking to people, you know, hearing their concerns and being able to translate that into, you know, what I want to stand for in Congress. And right now what I'm hearing is, you know, we've got a lot of work to do. You know, COVID has really been rough on a lot of folks. And you know, a lot of folks have really lost ground. Our kids have lost ground. Women have lost ground. A lot of working families have lost ground. So what I'm looking at is, you know, really concentrating on, you know, economic fundamentals, you know, education, infrastructure, you know, job training, clean energy, things to make, you know, the federal stimulus, you know, more permanent in Arizona. And there's just no time to waste. So I'm in it. I put my hat in the ring and I'm starting to work.
Unlike what some might think of the legislative session, that it would be primarily focused on COVID relief, this legislature seems to be focused on advancing dozens of bills that are under the, put air quotes around it, voter reform, including bills that could make it very hard for Arizonans to vote by mail. that has become a big focus, hasn't it, of this legislative session?
It has, and you're absolutely right. You know, when we all came back to session, we thought we would be working on COVID relief, you know, help for families. But instead, you know, we've been battling a kind of conspiracy theory motivated, you know, voter suppression bills. So really, you know, that's been kind of a 1-2 punch that we've been looking at. One is really undercutting the voters' confidence in our 2020 election by, you know, trying to do a whole nother audit after many audits have already been done and found no problems of the Maricopa votes. And then also pushing this rollback on voter access, you know, concentrating a lot on mail-in ballots. And, you know, you may know 80% of Arizonans use mail-in voting. When I knock on doors, people love it. It's convenient. It allows them to research the candidates. And now we're just going to make it more difficult for them. You know, we're going to take them off the rolls if they're not excited enough to be voting in every election. We're going to make them prove their identity. We're going to make them notarize their ballots. I mean, things that just really are unnecessary.
Should there be?
We just haven't had the problems.
Should there be something that is a uniform federal law? I think it's called the For the People Act, that would basically set some standards on a federal level for as we go forward with our elections?
I would say yes. We're seeing this in Arizona. We're seeing it in other states. And I think voting rights are so fundamental. I mean, can you think of anything more fundamental to our democracy than the right to vote? And if, you know, state legislatures are going to be rolling this back, we need the federal government to step in. So, yes, H.R. 1, the For the People Act, is a very good law that's going to draw the line and say, no, people have the right to vote. And, you know, things in that bill will increase voter access and will also make our voting fair. Through doing things like what we've done in Arizona by having an independent redistricting commission.
We have your colleague in the legislature, Dr. Randy Freese. He announced shortly after you did that he would also be running for this seat. And I've talked to a lot of Democrats who praise both you and Dr. Freese, saying you're both great candidates, and they wonder where you two might differ as you go forward with this campaign.
You know, Randy is a friend. He's a colleague. He's a great candidate. And I am hoping that together, you know, we're really going to get issues out on the table for folks to discuss. I think there's a lot of overlap in what we're looking for. I think I'm going to be emphasizing more the post-COVID economic plan for really kind of a permanent, sustainable economy. I think he will probably, well, I don't want to put words in his mouth. I know we're both very interested in access to affordable health care, and we're both very concerned about the recent instances of gun violence in our country and what we can do in a way to uphold the Second Amendment, but also make these incidents much less likely to occur.
How concerned are you on these attacks all over the country on people of Asian descent who are American citizens?
I'm very concerned about that. That has really been shocking. And we really need, you know, our leaders, our community leaders to be speaking out against this. You know, this is it comes out in American society every once in a while that there is kind of a targeting of a particular racial or religious group. And we have to stand strong against these what seem to be hate crimes. and call them out and make sure that the Asian community or whatever community is being victimized, that they know that we're standing strong with them.
Before we let you go, Senator Engel, any idea how long this legislative session might go on this year?
Well, that's, I think it's time to start taking bets on that. You know, there's still bills that are going through, and then, of course, we have to do the budget. And the thing to look out for here is, you know, how is the legislature looking at, you know, the future? Are they going to pass a lot of tax cuts, which is just going to set us behind in terms of addressing, you know, the needs of our schools and our universities? Or are they going to be responsible and invest in our education system, our kids, really our future? So that's what to look for.
How can people get involved with your campaign?
Well, they can sign up on my website, Engel for Arizona. That's ENGELFORArizona.com. Still working on that website, so we'll have a lot more content on there soon. But they can go to that. They can donate. They can sign up to be a volunteer. They can leave a comment about what they would like me to advocate on for their on their behalf.
All right, Senator Kirsten Engel, good talking with you, and we'll talk some more. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Arizona State Senator Kirsten Engel, not only representing Tucson in the legislature, but would like to represent the people of Congressional District Number 2 in the 2022 congressional elections. It's Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. Our guests on the live line appearing courtesy Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We'll be right back.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Welcome back. It is Buckmaster on this Tuesday afternoon in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Our live line courtesy Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Mitch Tobin, one of our contributors on the Buckmaster Show. We've got 24 excellent contributors to this program, and Mitch is the director of the Water Desk. It's a journalism initiative at the University of Colorado Boulder, focusing on Western water issues in the Colorado River Basin. Mitch is an award-winning journalist, a former environmental reporter for the Napa Valley Register, the Tucson Citizen, and Arizona Daily Star. He's the author of Endangered, which shows why so many species are at risk of extinction. The book won a gold medal in the Independent Book Publishers Awards. Mitch joins us now on the live line from his home base in Colorado. Mitch, how are you?
I'm doing great, Bill. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, so it begins. We're going to push into the lower 90s. Looks like this weekend, the warm weather, near record temperatures already beginning. All of us are probably saying right now, it's too early for this. And the wildfire season in the West now is underway up in South Dakota. In fact, Mount Rushmore National Park has been closed. Here we go again, Mitch Tobin.
Yeah, the wildfire season, has been beginning earlier and ending later. That's one of the real trends that we've seen, and climate change is a big part of that. So the season is, very intense in terms of the types of fires, but also the length of the season is growing. So that's posing a lot of challenges. And right now we have a really significant portion of the American West in various states of drought. And so that is always something that people are looking at in terms of trying to predict the wildfire season ahead.
I'm curious about Colorado. We've heard about you had some near record snowfall recently, and then I think you got some recent snow. How does the snowpack look in the Colorado, in the mountains, in the Rockies, which doesn't necessarily affect the Colorado River Basin, does it?
Yeah, so the snowpack in Colorado is looking better than it was a month or so ago. As you mentioned, there were a couple of pretty big storms. But the biggest one, the one that impacted Denver and that made a lot of hot headlines, that one primarily hit to the east side of the Continental Divide. So the precipitation that falls east of the Continental Divide doesn't go into the Colorado River. That's west of the Continental Divide. Now, they did get some snow, and we have had some storms in other parts of the state. But the snowpack season started out pretty poorly here, and things were looking pretty grim for a while, but we have had a little bit of a rebound, and it's brought up the snowpack totals closer to normal. But that, real recent storm that here in Denver, generated about 2 feet of snow, 3 to 4 feet in some places to the west of here in the foothills, that then doesn't necessarily help the Colorado River and those reservoirs, but we have had some more recent precipitation. I think the interesting, trend that we've been seeing is that even if we have an average snowpack season in a place like Colorado, that doesn't necessarily translate into an average runoff season to something like the Colorado River. So right now the projections for Lake Powell, the water entering, are that it's going to be about half of average. And the snowpack is much better than that in the basin, but because it's been so dry for so long as part of this drought, what some people call a mega drought, the soils, soak up that moisture before it reaches the rivers and the reservoirs. And also now with climate change, we've got warmer temperatures, higher evaporation rates. So there's can be something of a disconnect between the snowpack and what actually reaches the rivers and reservoirs.
Your former colleague, Tony Davis, at the Arizona Daily Star has been doing, Tony's an award-winning reporter on the environment. He's been doing some really good work about of late about how climate change, Mitch Tobin, stands a good change, a chance of cutting into Tucson, our future groundwater supplies. This was, I think he was writing about a new study from the Bureau of Reclamation. That's a scary report, I'll tell you.
Yeah, that's very concerning. I mean, in Arizona, you know, for a long time was really reliant on its groundwater and was, you know, bleeding those aquifers dry. Eventually, Arizona was able to tap into the Central Arizona Project and the Colorado River water that it carries from Lake Havasu to Phoenix and Tucson. And so over time, a place like Tucson has shifted away from its essentially finite groundwater resources toward the Colorado River, which is a renewable supply since it snows every winter and, you know, water comes down the river. But it's still an important part of the water supply. And if there are cutbacks to the surface water supplies, very frequently communities then go and look at their groundwater. And so, again, this issue of warmer temperatures, increasing the evaporation rate and decreasing the amount of water that's recharged into the aquifer is, you know, quite troubling. And, you know, of course, there's also potential effects of climate change on precipitation patterns, the monsoon, and so the amount of rain and snow falling from the sky is also changing. And so, you know, we're seeing these effects both in terms of the surface water supply, the Colorado River and its tributaries, but also groundwater basins, not only in Arizona, but in many places throughout the world.
Let's see if we can work a quick call in. David wants to speak with Mitch Tobin. I've got about a minute. David, go ahead.
Yes, I want to bring out something that we have ignored, is that we're converting our xeriscape landscape to high water use. And I want to use an example. Tangerine Road. 30 years ago, you drive down Tangerine Road, it's all desert. Doesn't use a drop of water. Now you drive down, there's housing developments, golf courses, strip malls, everything that uses water. This is happening all over the state. Our population has grown like 200,000 a year, and we're converting the desert into cookie-cutter housing developments. Every acre of desert that's scraped and converted into development requires a half a million gallons. The average development is about five households to an acre. An average household uses 100,000 gallons of water a year. You put five to an acre, it's half a million gallons.
You know, that's an argument. This whole, this is a controversy, Mitch, that's been going on forever here about whether how sustainable our area, Arizona, is with limited water.
Yes, and that's a big part of the equation, the demand side. It's not just about the supply in terms of the rain and the snow and what's in rivers and reservoirs. And, you know, that is a legitimate issue in terms of increasing population, more demands on our water resources. A lot of communities, Tucson included, have done a pretty good job in terms of reducing their per capita water use by adopting more conservation-friendly policies like xeriscaping. But certainly, you know, if you increase the population sufficiently, even if you decrease the per capita rate, eventually you can increase the amount of total water used. And so I think that's really important. And the fact that our water supply is increasingly, it seems, insecure really speaks to the importance of conservation measures and limiting the demand on our water resources. But of course, that's really tied up into these big issues of growth and development.
Mitch Tobin, always a pleasure. Director of the Water Desk, an initiative, journalism initiative at UC Boulder. Thanks, Mitch. Take care. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Bill. Take care.
The Buckmaster Show, this portion presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, now ready to welcome you back. It's only a 3-hour drive east of Tucson. So much to do, including hiking in the Gila National Wilderness. What a beautiful time of year to do some hiking over in the Gila or visiting the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. For more information on the many things to do and some great places to stay, please visit southwestnewmexico.org. That will wrap it up for our Tuesday edition of the Buckmaster Show on the is March 30th. On behalf of my engineer-producer, John Couch, I hope everybody has a great afternoon. And don't forget, Dave Ramsey is coming up with The Ramsey Show in a few seconds. Have a great day.